Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live, and we are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. College football writer for The Athletic, Mitch Light, joins us now. Mitchell, I think we have the best slate of college football games this past weekend, maybe ever. Call it recency bias or call it that good of a slate, but I thought this past weekend was just a blast. But what did you learn about the SEC this past weekend?
Well, it was obviously a great week, and also the games like were great too, and I know we want to talk about the SEC, but starting with the Clemson-Florida State game, the drama there going into overtime, and then, you know, the premier game at night, the Ohio State Notre Dame game with a legit walk-off, which you do not see in football very often. As far as the SEC, not too much. I mean, you know, the results were, I guess, for the most part, expected. You know, LSU probably had a little more difficulty than you and other Tiger fans would like with Arkansas.
Heard that.
A win is a win. When you only play 8 conference games, it doesn't, for the most part, it doesn't really matter. You just need to win and survive. Now, if you're an elite team like LSU thinks it can and should be, and you're we're at the end of the season, you're trying to figure out, you know, parse through resumes of one-loss teams, you don't want too many close calls at home. But, you know, we get Arkansas as a solid team there. You know, Alabama kind of proved it could win ugly and could win, you know, Jalen Miller had pretty good numbers there and could win with defense there. You know, obviously Kentucky took care of business at Vanderbilt. Florida flogged through a non-conference win over Charlotte. So, you know, it's sort of just, to me, a status quo weekend in the SEC.
Will Lane Kiffin ever beat Nick Saban?
I don't know, but they're always entertaining, or seemingly entertaining. I mean, the game, was it 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the 63-48 game in Oxford? The game freshman year when, I'm trying to blank on his name, he's now at UCF, the quarterback who also plays baseball.
John Rhys Plumlee.
Yes, good call there. Yeah. You look like they couldn't stop him. Down in Tuscaloosa, he was running wild for a little while before Alabama caught up. So for a one-sided rivalry, when you throw in the Lane Kiffin, you know, drama or whatever you want to call it, it's a very entertaining rivalry. And, you know, it's Kiffin knows what he's doing. You know, more people talked about Ole Miss football last week than typical. Not that there's like some unknown program, but, you know, any pub is good pub. And you know, I'm sure he would have liked to win the game, but people were talking about Ole Miss all week.
Now, Mitch, I'm going to get away from the SEC for a minute here, and this is a coaching question. Obviously, we all know what's going on at East Lansing,
yes.
And they've dropped the last two games, and it hasn't been close, so it seems like they're feeling the effects of the head coaching firing. Who do you think should be on the top of that list? Everybody keeps screaming Urban Meyer, but I'm like, please, just got rid of one. We don't want to go into another problem. But who do you think is at the top of that list?
Yeah, I mean, I don't consider myself to be a Michigan State insider, but with the problems that school has had in that arena, so to speak, the last thing they need to do is hire Urban Meyer. So I would hire Sean Lewis, the offensive coordinator at Colorado. And I might have told you this before the season even started. It's not like, oh, who's this guy? Like, I pay a lot of attention to the coaching moves and new hires and stuff. And I remember, you know, he was when in Dino Babers' second year at Syracuse when they were putting up huge numbers. I was like, okay, you know, who's running that offense? Well, Sean Lewis was the offensive coordinator. He gets the head job at Kent State, one of the most difficult jobs in the country, and built them into a winner and an exciting winner. And we've seen what he's done at Colorado. Obviously, they struggled on Saturday. They were a huge mismatch. But he's a guy that he checks the boxes. He has run a – he's, you know, been an offensive coordinator at Power 5 schools, two of them, and he's run his own program. Mike Elko is another one. Obviously, what he's done in a short amount of time at Duke, and he's also well-traveled. He's been in a lot of different leagues. He's defensive-minded. So, you know, I think this is a pretty good, I think there'll be a pretty good candidate pool this year. Some years there's not, some years there are. But I mean, I between Sean Lewis and Mike Elko, I would think one of those two guys would be a home run.
Okay. Now, are Georgia and Texas the best two teams in college football right now? I know Michigan put it on Rutgers last week. Rutgers is a pretty good team. O-State, that was a tough one with Notre Dame. I think that has been the best game thus far in college. But do you think Texas and Georgia are the two best teams at this point?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't get many arguments. I'm trying to think, like, Michigan has been impressive, but they have not played a road game. Georgia, I don't think Georgia's played a road game either. No, the South Carolina game was at home. Not that you can't be a good team, obviously, just winning at home. The two best wins, like, there's so many different ways you can rank, especially earlier in the year. Is it based on, like, who you actually think's the best team, who deserves it, you know, because the two best wins are Texas at Alabama and Ohio State at Notre Dame. So if someone wanted to rank those two teams one and two, at this point of the year, I wouldn't have a big problem with it. But I would say, just from kind of the overview, I would not argue with that assessment. I would definitely have Georgia number one. I don't know if I'd have Texas number two. Like, if I had Michigan number two in the preseason, mm-hmm. and they've cruised, you know, I see no problem keeping them number two. But each week is a new data point. We get more information. So far it looks like it's going to be a fun year. But the fact that it's not a certain that this is the best team and this is a certain number two team is kind of exciting.
Mitch Light with us. Mitch, we've seen a couple of really interesting, almost like professional wrestling kind of yes. interviews and showcases by head coaches. Ryan Day, after Notre Dame, getting all upset about what Lou Holtz said. Lou Holtz, who's putting him on the air?
Who cares what Lou Holtz has to say?
But it was so impassioned. Like, he really used that. I'm sure behind closed doors he was using the same kind of thing. And then the whole Oregon thing was a whole animal unto itself. And D-May shared something. Like, I guess there was some social media stuff that got back to Oregon in the pregame warm-up that probably fueled the fire a little bit more. But it's interesting how these coaches are using this kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's smart. You use anything, any slight, perceived, real, or, you know, to your advantage. Any sort of motivational tactic you can. And, you know, Ryan Day, that was, I don't mean not out of character. Yeah, I guess it was out of character. I was like, you know, I was in a hotel room lying down watching the game, trying not to, like, disturb, you know, but my wife was already sleeping and stuff like that. And I was like, this madman just gets in the camera and starts yelling about Lou Holtz. Because I hadn't seen, you know, I wasn't aware of Holtz's comments on the Pat McAfee show before. And, you know, a lot of that is just frustration from him. Obviously losing 2 years in a row, hearing from hearing from his fan base about the perception that they're a finesse program, they can't get the tough yard. The funny thing about that was they had 3 fourth-and-1s. He throws the ball once, runs an end around onto the other one, and then on the last one, they need like a yard or a half a yard. The other team only has 10 guys, is down a defensive lineman, and they still only get it by like 3 inches. So then all of a sudden they're a real tough program because they can get that tough yard. So it's just such a results-oriented business where they got 3 inches against 10 men on the field, so suddenly they're that tough program. But hey, whatever works, you know, it's fun. It's fun to talk about. Go back, if you haven't found the video, find the clips, you know, Oregon sent out of the Colorado players talking smack at the coaches and the players. And, I mean, that, you know, sometimes we think coaches make stuff up to get their team motivated. That's not making anything up. This is like one team literally talking, you know what, about coaches and players before a game and then being down 35-0 at the half. So that was, in that case, I think Colorado got what was coming to them.
Well, that was what was interesting is there was a lot of narrative after the game of, hey, look, Deion, boy, he's taking all kinds of heat here. Wow, look at the target he's become. But he didn't, I guess people at that point did not see what has been circulated. I was sitting there going, why in the world would you go for it up 42-0, I think, 4th-and-goal from the 4?
Middle finger.
It was absolutely. And I'm thinking, is this really necessary? Like, are you going that? But I didn't know at the time about what they had done, I guess taunting the players and coaching staff. So it does make you wonder, where does Colorado go from here, and how does Deion address that with his players, right, one way or the other? Double down on it, or just say, look, we maybe not maybe shouldn't go at an opponent like that. You know, keep it within our, you know, let's have our own machismo, but let's not share it with the other team like that.
I don't pretend to know what makes Deion tick, but I have a feeling he would say, talk what you got to talk, boys, but you better back it. You better be able to back it up, and you didn't back it up on Saturday because, you know, Deion was the ultimate guy who could back it up on the field there. And where do they go from here? You know, the result will probably be similar this week, although USC's defense did not play well against Arizona State. We know their problems. So I wouldn't be surprised if Colorado scored 21, 28 points, but I cannot see Colorado slowing down that USC defense. So it's just sort of like a recalibration, you know, for Colorado. Now the goal becomes, you know, no one thought that they were a playoff team. And if you did, that means you just kind of read the headlines and stuff. This is a team that if they get to a bowl game, they got a very difficult schedule. If they get 6 or 7 wins, it's a huge success for Deion. He is attracting the attention of a lot of top recruits, not necessarily getting commitments yet, but, you know, you could have 2 5-star receivers on hand this week in person. We know what kind of atmospheres they're getting in Boulder there. So this does not derail Deion by any stretch. I would not consider, I predicted they'd be down 35-0 at the half, but not surprised at all by what we saw in Eugene on Saturday.
Now, do you think with the win this prior weekend with Alabama that they quieted some of the noise just a little bit?
For 1 week. I mean, you know, Alabama fan, until the next 3rd and 7 when they throw an incomplete pass. I mean, I think it's a confidence builder for that offense in Jalen Milroe because, you know, Ole Miss isn't known as the toughest defensive team, but it's a legit SEC defense. You know, they've got good players on that defense to be efficient like they were. Now, it was a slog in the first half. I know they played better in the second half. So I think it's going to be a struggle all season offensively for them. And it's just, you know, Nick Saban's going to kind of change the way they coach, change the way they go about things. I'd be surprised if we ever see this offense flourishing like we have with Alabama in the last, you know, 5-7 years.
Nothing boosts confidence quite like blocking a punt, getting the ball on the 1 yard line, not getting a penalty, but losing yards. Nothing really instills confidence and screams Nick Saban quite like that.
Did you guys see that video of Saban breaking down that play?
I did not.
Oh, you got it. On his coach, he doesn't, you know, I didn't know they still did coaches' shows, but he still has maybe it's a sponsored segment. I think he does right after the game, where he diagrams one play, a key play of the game. It's fantastic, as you can imagine, Saban. So he goes over all these things about what they saw, what went right with this punt block. It was, like, fascinating, like 7 different things needed to happen. And then he looks at the camera and says, and we got the ball at the 1 yard line, and I'm paraphrasing, he goes, we didn't do anything with it there, and kind of smirks, but the play worked at least. So it was a rare moment of, like, Saban kind of poking fun of himself. But search that out. You'll learn how to block a punt, Caroline.
Oh, good, because I have been wondering how I can block some block more punts these days. Mitch Light, appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat next week.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, thanks, Mitch. All right, you brought up, I think, the big topic around college football is Colorado. They were riding high. It was the Deion phenomenon, and they got humbled a bit against Oregon. And Dan Lanning made it very clear to his team pregame, hey, we do this for wins. We don't do this for clicks. So now what does that do for the Deion and Colorado phenomenon? We'll get into that coming up next and your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Hey, tune into 93.3 Classic Hits this Thursday for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will kick off at 6:30 p.m. on the road against rival Western Kentucky. Pregame beginning at 5:30 p.m. You can hear all the coverage on the 93.3 Classic app and at 93.3classichits.com.
We want to know how you respond. Your teammates want to know how you respond. Your family, your significant, your girlfriend. Your friends, everyone wants to know, how do you respond? I want to know how you're going to respond. I know what's in this room. I still believe in what is in this room. I understand what is in this room, and I got love for what is in this room. I'll read this to you today. I need to play this week. We need to get everything we can so I can get back on the field. I'm not taking no for an answer. Who you think sent me that? How did you know that? Because what? No, you ain't ready, and I care about you more than I care about this game. You're going to change the game of football one day when you're healthy and ready. The future is brighter than mine ever will be and ever was. Relax and get healthy. I love you, son. That was the conversation. I care about y'all more than I care about this game. But I want you to learn throughout this game and throughout trials and tribulations who you are.
Colorado got that boat whooped. Whooped! It was over at halftime. Oregon takes it 42-6. And look, what we heard there from Deion. I think Deion really is a good guy. Like, I think he's a good role model for that locker room. But... D Deion's question is, how does his team respond? That should be his question. How do you respond? You were riding high. You got humbled. How do you respond? What I'm more interested in is, how does the world respond to Colorado no longer being the big bad Buffaloes and Colorado being the one that got that butt handed to them by Oregon? Because I thought last week, we talked about this, what if Colorado loses? What does that do to the Deion phenomenon? What have you all seen, and what do you think is going to be the response to all of the hype surrounding Colorado now that they have a loss on their schedule?
First, what I see is people making excuses for this Colorado team. Travis Hunter wasn't there. And I get it, he's a hell of a talent.
He's not a 30-point talent.
Oregon was supposed to win. They're the better team, yada, yada. You hear all these excuses. Okay, let me put that aside for a minute. Deion, Coach Sanders. I was fortunate enough to play a year with them in Baltimore. I'm always going to root for Coach Sanders. And the one reason I'm rooting for Coach Sanders has nothing to do with his coaching ability. I don't know if he's a great coach or not. He's surrounded himself with pretty good coaches. I know that. And that's the first step into being a good coach. You surround yourself with other good coaches. But the one thing that I think trumps everything that they've done up until now and what other coaches may or may not do, he loves those kids. Mm-hmm. He truly cares about those kids. That's why they will go the extra mile for him and play a little bit harder for him, because he genuinely cares about those kids. I don't think every college coach genuinely cares about the guys that they're recruiting. The bottom line, win games. That's all they care about. I see he cares about those kids. I see a Nick Saban now. Not to say that he didn't before, but he cares about those individuals, those kids. People, former Alabama or Michigan State, or when they talk about Coach Saban, they talk about him in glowing words. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, he's tough, but this is, you know, he cares.
Good coaches care.
Exactly. Coach Sanders cares about those kids. Okay, put that aside. They got their ass whooped. They did.
Make no mistake about it.
And Travis Hunter wouldn't have helped them. He wouldn't have.
No.
It's not like they got beat by 7 points, 10 points. They got mollywhopped. They got taken in the back and just bam. You couldn't even put up a fight. We jumped you. We jumped all of y'all. And here's the crazy part about it is that, and I'm going to say this, and I've thought about it. When I was at home the last couple of days, I'm like, man, should I even go there? Because, you know, I don't want to draw more attention to it, but I'm seeing it, and it irritates me. Why does at least in this situation, why does it have to be a race thing? I've seen so many people that have made it, oh, you don't like them because the brother's doing well. And somebody said, don't you know there are a lot of other black coaches out there as well?
Yeah.
You know, this is the thing that I believe they don't like about Coach Sanders. You can't tell me that, you know, there's going to be a faction of people that don't like him because it's sort of this arrogance that exudes from him, and people would think it's cockiness. But it's confidence from him in what he does. He believes in what he does. So there's going to be people that don't like him because of that. Then there are going to be people, a small faction, don't like him because, yeah, he's a black man having success and he's being loud about it. So there's going to be a faction of people that don't like that. But I think everyone, either you like him because you're a Colorado fan or you like him because you see what he's doing. Mm-hmm. When you try to interject race into it, I see all of them do that. It's like, stop it, Stephen A. Stop it, Clark. Stop it, Shannon. Stop doing that. Because he has white guys on his coaching staffs. So what you saying, they hate him? I don't understand this. They don't like, you know, they don't like anyone that is going to talk loud. They didn't like Steve Spurrier. Hell, they didn't like Coach Saban. And Coach Saban rarely talks, but he wins. Okay? There's a Lane Kiffin. People don't like him. White folks, black folks, it don't matter. They don't like him.
I don't like Lane Kiffin.
Exactly. You don't like Lane Kiffin. So, to me, please, in this situation, yes, you're going to have some that don't like him because of that. But it's a small fraction of people. Don't make this thing big where, oh, you don't like him because he's a black man doing well. That's not the case. You know, they don't like the brassness that he's coming out.
The bravado.
The bravado. Because all coaches is like, listen, they tell their players, just do your job. Don't talk trash. Don't draw attention. Bulletin board material.
Right.
Don't give the other team bulletin board material.
The Nick Saban way.
Exactly. And people just thought the way Coach Sanders did it. They didn't like him when he was at JSU. And you're talking about an HBCU. Mm-hmm. They didn't like him. Why? Because he was winning and he was loud about it. So, damn it, stop that. Stop it. Because it doesn't have a place in this situation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. We got a lot of other situations going on in this world that it does have a place. But this one, it doesn't. Because regardless of the fact, there are going to be some people that like him, some people that don't like him. Some white folks that like him, some black folks that like him. Some white folks that don't like him, some black folks that don't like him. They didn't like him at JSU. He's at an HBCU, and those coaches complained about him.
Yeah.
I didn't hear no white coaches complaining about him at HBCU. It was all black coaches. It wasn't because they didn't like him as a person. They just didn't like the way he came off. The bravado. But that's Deion.
You create enemies. Exactly. When you rock the boat.
But my thing, my point to it is this. I like Deion because he loves those kids. Mm-hmm. That's why. I'm not a huge Colorado fan. Didn't go to Colorado. Went to visit. Chose not to go because it was so far away from home. But as long as I don't care if he wins or lose. What he just said on that little snapshot, that's what I care about. That right there. And he had to, it ain't about football with him. It's about making sure these kids are all right. And then through that, the win is going to come. He's going to lose, I guarantee you, 3 or 4 more games this season, okay? He will. But he's going to have time to build that program back up. I'm sorry I took all the whole segment.
Oh, that was great.
You know,
very well.
But it's just been on my heart because I see it, and I see well-known people throw this into the conversation where it doesn't need to be had.
Very well said. But I think overall, whether you love him, whether you hate him, for whatever reason, what he's doing is good for college football.
Exactly. Oh, what he's doing is great.
I can't wait to see it. I hope he continues with it. I want to see where it goes in 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to be fun.
Exactly.
The ups and downs. Everybody
he needs some
ups
more recruits. He needs some more recruits on that defense and offensive line. That's where he needs it.
He's absolutely made things interesting. I don't remember the last time I was interested in an Oregon-Colorado game.
Never.
Appointment watching for me this past week, and it was because of Deion Sanders. We will chat with Clark Lee coming up next. Tough way to start SEC play, falling to Kentucky on Saturday. We'll get Clark Lee's perspective on it coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Joining us now is Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lee. Clark, tough one to open up SEC play, falling to Kentucky on Saturday. And I was there. It was a great environment. It was a packed house. But one thing I've been noticing is with AJ Swan is he's got the bravado to be able to make some of those risky throws, to be able to go out there and really try and take some risks. But sometimes they don't always fall his way. What's one thing that you've been talking to AJ Swan about, taking those risks but taking them responsibly?
Well, this has been a conversation that we've been having since the Hawaii game. Honestly, there were, if you go back to that game and the manner in which we won that game, we missed opportunities to separate, and we exposed the ball late, and they weren't able to capitalize. And so, I can remember a play where their corner jumped the ball in the flat and actually it hit him right in the chest, and he would have been going the other way for a touchdown had he not dropped the ball. So you think about that win and you consider how we have failed to redirect the way that we're playing and protecting the football at the quarterback position. You know, you understand a little better that we're fortunate to come out of the game without, something more dramatic. We gave the ball up on the goal line against Alabama A&M. And then obviously, you know, since then we've been, and it hasn't all been AJ, right? There's been other facets that have led to turnovers and scores off turnovers. But certainly, when you look at the Kentucky game, the two interceptions for touchdown and the one that set possession inside the 10-yard line were backbreakers for us. And so, so you ask about, you know, our conversations. I mean, you can be a really good quarterback, and AJ is. He's just young. He started 11 games for us. He's 19 years old. He's learning the position, and these are hard lessons to learn. But you know, you can be a really good quarterback, and at times that means you're taking sacks. At times that means you're throwing the ball away. At times that means you're finding your check down early in the progression rather than late. And all those things strengthen the performance of the team. And so you want your quarterback to be able to take risks. What you don't want to see is us throwing a seam ball into three defenders that are there to ready to intercept it. I mean, it's just there's some things that what you don't want to see is a ball when you're under pressure thrown late and without any tempo to the flat. Those are things that aren't ever going to be a recipe for success offensively. Those are risks that we're not willing to take, and we have to play better at that position to have a chance to do what we want to do as a team.
Yeah, absolutely. All learning opportunities. Clark Lee is with us. Clark, Will Shepard to me is like cowbell. I need more Will Shepard. He has been so fun to watch. He had that great catch in the end zone that, of course, got called back because of the holding call. How do you want to, or do you want to get Will Shepard more involved into the passing game, and what's your plan to do that?
Well, he's been really consistent in the red zone for us. He's not been as consistent for us in the field. And so getting him, and there's two aspects of this, and you know, I know Derek has opinions on this too, but the first is, you know, if you're going to play receiver, you gotta block on the perimeter, and we need to make sure that, you know, we've got talented skill both at running back, at tight end, and at receiver. We need to be blocking when we're called to block in a manner that opens up opportunities for us to get the ball moving and be efficient. And then there's been a couple where, you know, I can think of it kind of a couple out routes and a couple of slant routes where we haven't been consistent pulling them in. That's uncharacteristic of him. You know, first of all, Will's a tough player. And so, you know, I think for him, it's shifting focus to the small things done well and just making sure he's present, snap in, snap out. But I'd like to see a little more consistency there in the middle of the field. Obviously, we know what we have when we get in the red zone. He's as good of a one-on-one player down there. He's big body. He's a strong catcher. He's got the attitude for it too. Like, he wants that ball. And so we need to keep getting your cowbell down there. But I want for him to strengthen that performance in the field, and he will, because that's the kind of player he is.
We're talking with Vanderbilt's head football coach, Clark Lee. Now, you're right, Coach. I've always said when it comes to blocking and receiver, it's a want to, not a how to. I think if you want to go out there and block, you will block. If you don't, you're going to put up an effort where it shows on film. Now, you were without your safety, DeRicky Wright, to start the game. But then Jalen Mahoney goes out because of a targeting call. How much stress does that put on your secondary? Not just in the prior game, but moving forward. And what is the latest with DeRicky? I think, will Jalen be able to play the start of next game, or does he have to miss a quarter?
No, fortunately, you know, because it was one of those gut punches early that, we were, obviously we knew it was probably the way Jalen plays too. I mean, he plays a physical and kind of ruthless style of football, and so you always know this is a possibility. But on the contact, we just need him to keep his eyes up and you know, his head up. But regardless, obviously, you know, we had two guys in that game. First of all, Jalen will be available because it happened in the first half. We had two guys in that game, and Marlon Sewell and John House, that that prepared as though they were going to start. And we're ready when their numbers were called. And it wasn't perfect. You know, there were things, I think early on, especially, you know, as you know how it is, you get out there and game speed's a little different than practice speed. Mm-hmm. You gotta kind of learn how the angles tighten a little bit and the mistakes get amplified. And I thought through the first couple series for them, they did that. But they settled in and played really well. Obviously, House had the pick. Marlon Sewell was one of our leading tacklers. Had the stop on third and one. It was a huge play. And so, you know, did it put some stress and pressure on us? Yes. At one point, Marlon was a little banged up, and so we were getting Payne Daniel ready. Payne is a walk-on for us from NBA, who got into school, and we were fortunate to have connection, and, you know, he walked on to the team this summer. But, you know, I don't think in his wildest dreams, he or his family's wildest dreams, in the first SEC game of the season, would he be strapping his helmet up to go out there and play safety. You know, Marlon was able to stay in the game and finish it out. So I'm really proud of those guys. I think it's an opportunity for them to step up and show their preparation and support the team that way. DeRicky practiced today, mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that he'll be back. He wasn't without a little bit of a limp, but it was good to see him out there and getting his speeds. Obviously, you know, when you're out for a while, like, you know, he's kind of been going without practice in the week and then just playing on Saturday, over time you end up exposing yourself to soft tissue issues. And so we're just trying to get him and his body back in the physical shape it needs to be to play. But we feel like Jalen's availability this Saturday and DeRicky's availability this Saturday will solidify a group that now has built some depth because of having to fight through the injuries early in the season.
We're talking to Clark Lee. Chris Fowler, I can't remember exactly what game I was watching that he was doing, because he's doing some NFL games now, but he was talking about this phenomenon of the Australian punters. It snuck up on me. I didn't realize how many there were. I think he said there were 12 of 14 SEC teams that have one at least on the roster. And man, you guys have an unbelievable punter. That was one thing that helped get you guys back in the game, the field position change that he is providing very consistently.
The unfortunate thing is that, well, the first unfortunate thing is that I haven't been able to take a recruiting trip to Australia yet.
Put that on your list.
Out there for 24 hours. Yeah, I need to go out there for a few weeks, I think. No, Matty Hayball, listen, the unfortunate thing for us as a team is that we are winning those margins. And those are the margins that, you know, coming into the season, we were paying close attention to. Yeah, I didn't anticipate having the ball security issues, and particularly just, again, that decision-making through the quarterback position that we've had. But our starting field position, the way we're pinning the opponent, it's been awesome. The way we're flipping the field, you know, it's remarkable the year he's having. And you know, if you haven't spent any time with Matt Hayball, I don't know if you guys have ever heard that, do you guys know the cookies, Tim Tams? Do you guys know about that?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, let me educate you. Tim Tams are an Australian cookie that, you know, when Matt goes home, he always comes back with gifts. And he always brings Tim Tams for my kids and coffee for the office here. And I've got a freezer full of Tim Tams now. The family is obsessed. And so they, you know, they order on Amazon or whatever, but Matt Hayball is just, he's one of the great guys in this program. He's old. I think he's 24 years old now. He is, mature, a great leader, a humble worker, and he is a difference maker for us. And, you know, we should be talking about a team that, you know, has at least won 3 or 4 games to this point, because of his efforts. And it's unfortunate that we're not, but he needs to be recognized regardless because of his contributions. Pretty awesome.
So, Clark, I noticed today at your press conference you said that or AJ is questionable. I don't know. It may still be the lingering effects on his throwing arm, but I know it's got to be something for you to watch as he's making mistakes, as you mentioned. He's still very young, so it's got to be going through your mind, what is the best way to get him where he needs to be? And even within a game, is it time at, you know, is there a certain point where you have to take him out so we can take the step back maybe to take the two steps forward?
Well, that's what we need to, you know, we're paying attention to right now. And I, you know, I think it's hard because we know how talented he is. We believe in AJ. And like you say, and I've said this too, and I said it here at the presser, but, you know, he's a 19-year-old who started 11 games, who's still learning process, and he's still learning progression. And he's made some remarkable plays for us this season. But with the elbow and the fact that he's on a pitch count this week, and just in preparation, just meaning, you know, he's not taking every throw in practice. You know, we got to look at what's the best for the program moving forward. And is it getting him back fully healthy? Is it allowing him to create a little bit of space to reset himself mentally? You know, or is it putting him back out there and just continuing to let him to learn through his mistakes and knowing that he is improving, he is getting better. And again, I think the performance hasn't shown that yet, but with every one of those mistakes, he's learning a little bit more, and we're going a little bit further in the way we're teaching and coaching him. That's what we're looking at this week. And I could see, you know, both of those strategies being effective. I think the number one thing we're focused on is just, you know, we want him back healthy. I don't want to put him back out there if I feel like, you know, two series into the game, he's going to be dealing with arm pain that's affecting the way he's performing. That's not fair to him. It's not fair to the program either. So that's what we're paying attention to right now, and we'll see how he progresses as the week goes.
Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Clark, appreciate you for stopping by. Always appreciate your time. And also what would be appreciated is a couple extra boxes of Tim Tams.
Yeah, the Tim Tams.
That you got laying around.
That sounds good. Yeah. We will
gladly accept those if they're taking up too much
room. And or the coffee from down under.
Well, all of the above.
The coffee lasts about a week, Willie. But the next time we do this thing in person, we'll Tim Tams for all. How about that?
Sounds good.
Deal.
Appreciate that. Thank you for stopping by, Clark. Good luck this weekend against Missouri.
Thank you. Y'all take care.
Awesome. Thanks, Clark. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach. Appreciate him for stopping by as always. Let's wrap it up with some of your Titans thoughts coming up next. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, Willie, DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and the Game Nashville app. Let's get into some of your thoughts. Our phone lines are driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. We got some angry
Super
Titans
Bowl.
Fans.
Usher, doing the Super Bowl.
Oh, yes, he is.
He is.
And who was in the skit with him? Prime Time.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Dion is everywhere.
Yeah, you can't
he
get away from
rent
Prime.
Free.
Yes,
a lot of places. But we got some angry Titans fans in the text line.
Let's
we got
hear
some angry
it.
Titans fans in the text line for really the last 48 hours. One texter texts in says, "At what point does Mike Vrabel's seat get warm? 1-9 in the last 10. No playoff wins in 4 years. Only 2 total. Defensive secondary has not been good in years. And the league is moving to more offensive-minded head coaches." I don't think you need to be an offensive-minded head coach to have success. But all the other things, I mean, those are undeniable facts.
Yeah, let's take that last part out of it, okay? I think you could just insert, fill in the blank, right? Let's use John Hines last year, right? When you struggle, when there is a struggle going on, everybody starts lining up on a resume the things you haven't done, right? Mm-hmm. You forget about, hey, couple division titles. You know, team was awful not too far before he got there. He took them to another level. All the good things he's done, right? But when your seat starts getting warm, this is what happens. You start nitpicking at everything that makes the resume look worse than maybe it actually is, but that is a natural thing. That's just what happens in this business.
That's the NFL. It's a what have you done for me lately league, and what Mike Vrabel has done lately is lose 9 of the last 10.
Yeah, it's this Mike Vrabel, should he be on a hot seat right now? No. But
why not?
Should we be concerned? Yes. I don't think he, you know, let's get through like 3 or 4 more games, and then you know, if they have a loser record, then it's like, okay, now, Mike, you're the guy. Mm-hmm. You got rid of everybody else that was, quote, unquote, the problem. Not necessarily you, but the organization said, hey, we got to move away from them, and you're the only guy left. So if say, in the next 4 games, you win 1 out of the next 4 games, then that's when it starts to get warm. That's when I think you will hear, not just locally, mm-hmm. you start hearing it nationally. Like, maybe Vrabel has, his welcome is worn out now. Maybe what he's saying isn't falling on the ears of the players that they need to fall on. Maybe, just maybe, the decisions he's made this offseason by keeping certain guys, maybe that's coming back to bite him in the rear end. Mm-hmm. So right now, no. But I do understand the whole, you know, in regards to offensive coordinators being head coaches, because people, what is it? When something's working, that's what people sort of look at, fans look
Copycat at. Copycat league.
Yeah, okay. McDaniel is working in Miami. He's an offensive guy. Mm-hmm. Obviously is working in Kansas City. He's an offensive guy. You go
Shane Steichen.
Shane Steichen.
So far is overachieved.
Exactly.
Right?
He's overachieved. He's an offensive guy.
Brandon Staley's an offensive guy. Yeah. They want him out of there.
But they want him out of there. But, you know, he has the talent. You just don't know why they haven't been able to put it together. So I understand when fans say, well, maybe we need an offensive-minded sort of head coach. But, you know, again, like Willie said, 2 years ago, you wasn't screaming at offensive-minded coach. Mike was a good coach. Mm-hmm. So if he was a good coach then, he's a good coach now. But I think what has happened is the league has gotten a lot better. The AFC has gotten a lot better, and the Titans have it. That's basically what it is.
My theme of the day is, remember what the power rankings had them all summer long. This is not a surprise that they're 1-2. Forget about what happened on Sunday specifically. Mm-hmm. 1-2, if I'd asked you on July 28th, what's their record going to be after three games? We all might have said 1-2. Might have, right? Yeah. So you have to put it in perspective. This is a team that's going to have to fight to stay relevant. They don't have the horses. They're not the most talented team. They're going to have to overachieve. The division is still very gettable mm-hmm. right now, but what is the strength of a Mike Vrabel team? They rally around each other. They believe in Mike Vrabel. He's a good leader. They buy in. The bounce back is going to be very important. Win or lose. They could lose on Sunday, but I would still, if they play well, I could mm-hmm. still feel better about where it's going. They just can't afford to have some of their weaknesses really come out again on Sunday. That mm-hmm. is when that seat might get a little bit warmer.
I think that there's different degrees of losses. If you go mm-hmm. out there and you play a really good game and you still lose, then you know what? It's the National Football League. It's hard to win. But what we saw on Sunday against the Browns, that wasn't just a loss. Mm-mm. You got your butt whooped and didn't really make anyone feel very confident mm-hmm. about it. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Peace.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.